close me up? On what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to an eargasmic edition of the U.S. Racing Sports Gambling Show. I am your friendly host, Derek Simon, and this is the show where we talk about everything and anything related to the world of sports gambling. And what a fine show on tap today, if I do say so myself. Former jockey Kate Rep drops by. Also, Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com. And we're going to recap last week's conference championships and look ahead to the Super Bowl. But before we get to that, there are a few things that you need to know.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
All righty then. I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're going to remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
I don't get it.
What part didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Tell you I can't. Yes.
The NFL is not the only sports league. Well, I guess you can't say racing is a sports league. It's not the only sport. Football is not the only sport with concussion problems. There are concussion problems in horse racing. And according to an article in the Sporting Life, racing officials are going to start looking into it. Five former champion jump jockeys, including Sir Anthony McCoy and Richard Dunwoody, have enrolled in a groundbreaking research project examining the long-term impact of concussion in the sport. Now, there's an interesting passage in this piece where Dunwoody says, as professional jockeys, with on average a fall every 14 rides, it was accepted that we would suffer concussion. Dunwoody, of course, a three-time champion jumps rider, retired in 1999 with a neck injury. And you know, it's funny, probably unlike a lot of folks who read the Dick Francis books and you read about jump racing, and he talks all the time about the dangers of jump racing and the craziness of it all. Once in every 14 rides. And I don't know if I told this story before. I know I told it to some friends and acquaintances, but I got my kids these hoverboards for Christmas. Well, my wife and I did. I'm not the only nice guy in this story. Yeah, I got it. My wife was going to get them a pencil set, but I said, let's get hoverboards. But the kids love the hoverboards, and I watched them on it, and they're so smooth. And I'm talking to my wife about this, and she said, well, it's not that hard. And she got on it. She looked great. So I thought, well, I'm going to give this a shot. So, of course, I'm much, much slower, but I'm doing okay. Up until I have to get off the hoverboard. And I'm told you kind of jump off of the hoverboard. Well, I tend to always jump off my toes. You know, I always use my calves. You can't do that on a hoverboard. I pulled a Mike Tyson. The board starts going one way. I start going the opposite way. It was like I was clotheslined. Yeah, I can't say the fall hurt that much, but it was a pretty big impact. And it made me think, you know, falling from a horse, you're up several feet. Once every 14 rides, are you kidding me? So good that folks are looking into this now, because as we learn more and more about concussion, it's a very, very serious business.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
I'm not gonna lie to you. I get weird.
Let's get nuts!
You just blew my mind.
This shit's crazy.
Are you not?
So I saw this piece by Dick Powell, and I've mentioned before, I get a lot of these stories from Equidaily.com. And the title of this article is Eclipse Award Snub and a Hidden Gem in the Turf Jockey Ranks. I want to concentrate on the Eclipse Award snub, because Powell is not the only one who has expressed this. As many of you know, Run Happy won the Eclipse Award for Sprinter of the Year. Not only Powell, but a bunch of other folks made note of the fact that the owner of Run Happy, Jim McInvale, did not mention former trainer Maria Burrell in his acceptance speech, in his thank you speech. Now, normally, this would be a snub. But Maria Burrell is suing McInvale. Honestly, I don't get this. It doesn't matter what you feel about the Runhappy situation, whether you think McInvale is a jerk, whether you think Maria Burrell is a jerk, whether you think I'm a jerk for having written about this, and there were some people who thought that. Why in the world would you thank somebody who is suing you? This would be like Charles Manson thanking the jury. This would be like, you know, you get a ticket and you thank the police officer. My wife did this once. And as the cop walks away, I'm like, really? You're thanking him? I mean, did he do us a favor? You know, it's just a goofy notion. And it is hardly a snub. I'm just mystified by it. Anyway, I'm going to come right back and talk a little bit with former jockey Kate Rep. Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds in the presidential race, the Academy Awards, or who's going to be the next James Bond. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace.
Now, back to your host, while he's still sober, here's Derek.
I'm now joined by jockey Kate Rep, and we're going to talk a little bit about what she's been doing. Kate, what intrigued me about your story is I saw a post, and it looks like you're really getting into the fitness world. Of course, that's a big passion of mine. But I'm always intrigued by people who become writers because, you know, I mentioned to Rosemary Holmeister last week, I'm scared of horses. I don't know how you guys get out there and ride these animals. What got you interested about horse racing?
You know, I just grew up in Washington, and as I was growing up, the racing was so big there with Longacre still going. So I grew up watching the guys at the farm break babies and gallop. It was, you know, and you grow up, you read The Black Stallion, you watch it on TV. You know, it was a passion of mine. I've loved horses since I was little. I was fortunate enough to have parents that really supported me and allowed me to ride. And I just ended up getting a job grooming horses and eventually breaking babies because I was interested in the racetrack. It's the one way you can kind of make a living and do the horses.
Yeah, I worked at on the backstretch at Long Acres for about 2 weeks, and I had a rash all over my arm. It was a split shift. I was walking to work. I mean, it makes a great story now to tell my kids, hey, you know, this is what I did. But it was not a successful stint on the backstretch. You know, I noticed you've got a 14% career winning average, not a lot of mounts, and some gaps in the riding. And I know that you were very seriously injured in 2015. Tell me a little bit about that and what your status is right now in terms of riding.
Well, it was January of 2014. I've just hit the 2-year mark. I was on a horse real early in the morning, just a filly mare, and I don't even honestly, because of the injury, remember all of what happened. I know it was dark. I typically backtrack the mare, and for whatever reason that morning, she must have been silly or stupid or extra wild, and I turned around and galloped her, and she bolted, and because of the training track at Turf Paradise, there's no lights, and I vaguely remember thinking if she sees the rail, she won't hit it. And I remember kind of trying to get her to look at it, but her head was in the air as they typically are when they bolt like that. She just never saw the fence. I ended up shattering my T5 and got, you know, knock on wood, incredibly lucky. I learned to walk again. I have some minor, you know, lingering things. Numbness and a little bit of no feeling, but again, I got lucky with an injury like that. A lot of people don't walk away from it. Anne Von Rosen, it was the same injury, and she doesn't. There's a couple of girls back east, I don't believe in God watching out for you, but somebody helped me, and I got lucky. Now I'm just kind of trying to recover from. You know, that, then I followed that up with a broken pelvis about 6 months afterwards.
Oh,
so it was, 2014 was a rough year.
I think that's what gets me, Kate, is because now I read the old Dick Francis books, and granted, you know, he was a jump jockey, and so there's even more injuries there. But it's like, it's one of those professions, you know, I don't wake up every day and think, well, I'm probably going to break a bone at some point in my career, you know, as I'm writing something. But as a jockey, that's a reality. So did it change your outlook? I mean, you know, I know that you're probably kind of on the fence now a little bit about riding again, but does it change your outlook in terms of, hey, do I even want to come back again?
You know, I was real aggressive, stupidly. I think this sport has just changed to where, as a rider, there's a lot of pressure to not rehab it, to, you know, you need to get back out there. You need to, getting on horses, you know, if you're not out there, somebody else is. And so I feel like maybe I put myself in a bad position. I certainly didn't take the time. You know, I broke my back January 7th, and I'm pretty sure I was back out getting on horses by the 1st of April, which was just, looking back on it, and I'm sure even further down the road, I'll be really upset that I didn't. But the pressure is, if you're not out there doing it, somebody else is just going to be swooping in and, you know, taking your business. So I didn't rehab it. I didn't take the time necessary. I just put myself, I wasn't, you know, when I came back, I wasn't riding as good as I should have because the injury was still there. And I just didn't do things right. So I think I didn't open the door to coming back as good as I could have. And like I said, I followed that up with a broken pelvis, and then I came back off of that too quickly just because I wanted to be out there so badly. And now I have a son, and, you know, I got real lucky, and I would love to ride again, but I don't know what, if it's in the cards in the future.
What is it like as a female rider? And I don't like to focus on these things in general, but I do think in horse racing, this has been a problem. Certainly with minority representation of any kind. Was it more difficult for you? Or do you think that, you know, you had a fair go at it?
Yeah, probably not. You know, there's just always going to be that thought in most people's heads that as a female, we're not as strong, we're not as talented. We certainly, as females in the business, work, I think, a lot harder on a whole to get less opportunity. You know, I had people that loved to ride girls, and then you had people you never were going to ride for because you were a girl. And that's just, you walk into that business, and if you can't handle that, you're not ever going to make it. So I think you just have to stand up tall and know your strengths. I certainly got a lot of run out of horses because I was a girl, because I had the ability to pet one on the shoulder and pitch them their heads and talk nice to them. And some horses really respond to that. And obviously there were big, heavy headed horses I probably wasn't going to fit, but I knew that going in, and you just try and make the best of the opportunity. And you do have to be tough. You have to be able to take the hard knocks and just not let it bother you. You can't let the guys bother you. You just have to be one of them. It's definitely a business where you have to be as tough as the men, but then still act like a lady, which is always a kind of a delicate balance.
Did you ever try the National Velvet or Johnny Manziel thing where you put on a big old mustache, called yourself Kit, and said, hey, I'm here to ride? That might have worked.
You know, I always laughed when my stat, or when it would come up as just K-Rep in the forum or K-Rep in the program, and I'd walk out to meet an owner, and they were pretty certain that I was supposed to be Kevin and not Kate. you know, and I always used to laugh and think that my life would have been a lot better had I been a Kevin instead of a Kate, but, you know.
Well, that's the funny thing. Like I said, when I look at your stats, a 14% lifetime average is nothing to sneeze at. You had a great year in 2009 where you're winning at practically a 20% clip. So yeah, it is. It's always kind of funny, but racing is just so odd when it comes to that. Now, I also wanted to talk about one of the things that intrigued me is when I saw your profile picture. It looks like you're doing some bodybuilding shows or some fitness shows. Tell me a little bit about that.
I did. I actually, you know, my whole career, I worked out and trained. I love the gym. It's just that place where you can go and you're going to get the results you work for. And there's nobody, you know, there's no outside play. Mm-hmm. You're going to get what you work for. And I love it. I did my first show, bikini show, in December. And I give those girls a lot of credit, the ones that keep going, because it's a hard, I mean, it becomes your job, between the dieting and just the commitment to it. But I had a lot of fun, and I think maybe I'll get ready for another one later in the year. You know, you always want to go into those better than you were before. So I've got some stuff I'd like to work on and see what happens.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what division you competed in. The one thing I do find funny about this, and I know a lot of guys who do this, so I don't mean this as an insult to them, but man, some of these guys spend a lot of money for a plastic trophy. It's like, you know,
it's incredibly true.
Yeah, on the guy side especially, because if you get into the bodybuilding side, I've talked to people before about the fact that Phil Heath, the reigning Mr. Olympia, I think he's an inch taller than me, and he outweighs me by like 120 pounds off season. It's like the thought of putting on 120 pounds of muscle is just very, very daunting. Tell me a little bit about your future plans now. You know, you mentioned that maybe for the riding, but is there anything else you've got in mind? Anything else you'd like to do?
You know, I have a jumping horse. It was a horse I got off of the racetrack. Sean Davis, who is just an incredible man all around, had a horse that he owned himself. And when the horse was ready to retire, I went and looked at him. And so I'm doing the 3-day eventing with him. Actually, we just came back from California last night from a big event over there. And so I'm enjoying that. I still get to ride and play with my horses, and I have my son that keeps me busy, and I'm back in school, so that's also a full-time commitment.
Oh, absolutely.
So I stay busy.
What are you pursuing in school?
You know, I'm going to finish my bachelor's in biology. I've gone back about 14 times, but I have about a year left to finish my bachelor's in that, and then I don't know. Honestly, maybe dental school, or I'm fortunate in the fact that I'm pretty smart. So, you know, while the riding was a passion of mine, I was smart enough to stop and go do something else. And maybe life was telling me it was a good time to do it in 2014.
Absolutely. Well, Kate, it has been a pleasure. I wish you continued success in whatever you do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on the program.
No problem. Have a good one.
Now, here's why you can win.
Every time you lose, you die a little bit. You die inside, a portion of you. Not all of your organs, maybe just your liver.
In our business, there is no second place. Either you're first or you're last.
You sick, saucy.
When you walk in that door on your two legs all fat and cocky,
you, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
If you look at this play, what we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
Remember, we do everything in reps. So if you have 2 reps of water drinking, usually we do 10 reps of everything. So do another rep of water drinking.
I am joined once again by Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com. Kevin, you had a great week last weekend, not only picking the games correctly, but really picking the reasons correctly. So congratulations on a job well done.
Thank you, Derek. And, you know, you look back at those two games last week. Yeah, I still don't know why everyone was so slanted on New England against Denver. And, you know, obviously a lot of people were probably down on Peyton Manning and the Broncos after they beat a Steelers team that many could have just looked at and said, well, Big Ben was hurt. Antonio Brown didn't play. They barely snuck by, so they have no chance against the Patriots. And yet Peyton tightened things up. He threw a couple touchdown passes. The defense played very well. They snuck out in the end. And then you look at the second game with Carolina, and, you know, the Panthers have been great at home all year long. And for Arizona, you turn the ball over like that, you're in trouble. And that's what happened. And Carolina's been a great team taking advantage of turnovers this year. And now we'll see what happens when we get to Super Bowl 50. If that's the case, if Denver turns the ball over, they'll be in big trouble. But I'd like to see what happens if Denver doesn't turn the ball over, what Carolina can do.
Now, we'll talk more about the big game next week, of course. But do you put any stock in line movement, Kevin? You know, I think when game was over, when the games were over this weekend, the line was 3.5 points in favor of Carolina. I think it's moved up to 4, 4.5 in some places. Does that mean anything to you?
It does. Just perception, and I know it's sneaking up to 5 in some places as well. And, you know, just to see what the public is on, what the sharps like, and there's been so much focus this week on Cam Newton and the Panthers, and really no talk on the Broncos. And, you know, I think that's one of the key things that I think a lot of people want to bet into, is that Carolina's coming off a victory over the defending NFC champion Seattle Seahawks at home, a convincing win, well, at least initially that Seattle came back. But, you know, they still end up winning that game, and they crushed Arizona. That's what people are remembering. It's almost like the freshest thing in your head, as opposed to Denver, which it doesn't feel very fresh, and what they did, beating a really good New England team and pretty much controlling that whole game. But I think the line movement, though, has got to be something to pay attention to, just because, you know, you want to see like where everyone's head is. And it kind of feels like this is going the same way as the AFC Championship, that a lot of people are one-sided on New England. The only difference with this situation as opposed to the AFC Championship is the line never really moved on that New England-Denver game, where this one, we see the line, you know, keep sneaking up a little bit as we get closer to the weekend. So be curious to see if there's Denver buyback as we go into next week.
All right. Well, like I said, we'll talk more about that game next week. And I'm fascinated, Kevin, because we talked a little bit of football before the show, too. I have no idea what sports you're looking at or anything. So go ahead. Take it away.
Yeah, I mean, we got a lot of college basketball is obviously very busy. You have the SEC Big 12 Challenge this weekend, which I think is a great thing for college basketball, that, you know, the only cross-conference, I can't really call it a tournament, but cross-conference competition we see is the Big 10 ACC Challenge in December, which kind of gets lost alongside football and at least early on in the NBA, where now this is the first time we're seeing this SEC Big 12 Challenge. You had a lot of really good games on Saturday. Kentucky visits Kansas. You also have Oklahoma and LSU with two of the top players in the country, Buddy Hield and Ben Simmons, hooking up in Baton Rouge. And West Virginia plays Florida, Iowa State, and Texas A&M. So there's a lot of really exciting games on Saturday. And, you know, college basketball, now we're really getting to the swing of things. And obviously in the NBA, you know, we saw at least on Wednesday night, three of the big powers in the league all won and covered as big favorites at home: Golden State against Dallas, San Antonio against Houston, and Cleveland against Phoenix. So now, you know, you wonder, are those trends going to hold up? I feel like with both San Antonio and Golden State, that you can't go against them at home. You just can't do it, because you're standing on the train tracks, you're going to get run over. So, you know, just wonder when those teams will lose their first home game. And those are kind of the big question marks, because obviously, you know, this NBA season, it kind of feels like you have Golden State, San Antonio, and Oklahoma City in the West. And then in the East, you have Cleveland. They just had the coaching change. And then you have Chicago. You have Atlanta. You wonder who's going to compete with the Cavaliers. So really, it almost feels like there's only a few horses in this race going towards the playoffs.
What do you make of that coaching change in Cleveland? I mean, you know, a lot of talk about it on social media. And I don't know. I think LeBron James, it took forever for him to recover from the unveiling in Miami. This looks like a power play on James's part. And I think there's a lot of downside here if this doesn't work out. Your take on that?
You know, and I'm based in South Florida, so obviously I was very much in tune with this whole situation when he left Cleveland to come to Miami, when he won the championships, left Miami to go back to Cleveland. And you had to figure that when David Blatt was first hired by Dan Gilbert in Cleveland before LeBron got there, that if LeBron went back there, that maybe this guy didn't have a lot of shelf life. He just wouldn't have. And, you know, you run through the resume of LeBron James's coaches. He's never played under Pat Riley as a coach or Greg Popovich. Very established. He's always played under guys that are in their first or second year in the NBA. That's what it feels like with Mike Brown and with Eric Spoelstra, who had been with the Heat for a few years, and obviously with Blatt, now Tyronn Lue, who's in his first year as the head coach of the Cavaliers. I don't know if LeBron necessarily put the hammer down on this one, but no one can tell me unequivocally that LeBron, in his year and a half with the Cavaliers the second time around, that he never had any negative comments or any criticism of David Blatt. There's no way you could tell me that he never went to Dan Gilbert or went to the GM and said, hey, this guy isn't working out, this isn't really working. When, you know, it's a very fuzzy situation, because it's not like the Cavaliers were a 41-41 team. You said, wow, like, this just isn't working. They were number one seed. They got to the finals, and two of their three best players were injured. Granted, I'm not taking away from Golden State. I'm not. They're great, and they won the finals. But I think everyone would have liked to have seen what Cleveland could have done with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love healthy alongside LeBron. So, I you know, is it necessarily that anybody could have coached that team or not? So I don't know if that was really on David Blatt. And they still have a better record this year through 41 games or whatever than they did last year. So I don't really know what the problem was, if it was internal or what, but now we'll see if Tyronn Lue gets into the number one seed. You can almost say anybody can coach LeBron James and he'll take them to the NBA finals or the conference finals. But you know, look, we all know LeBron's the power player here, and I just wonder what the input level was, but there's no way that he has no input.
And how about the Golden State Warriors? Because this is a team, first of all, that I really like. I remember commenting on a previous show about, I forget the coach that came out, or ex-coach, that talked about Stephen Curry ruining the game. And it's like, to me, it's just the contrary. I think there's been so much away from the shooting side of it. And I love to see a story like Stephen Curry. Here's a guy who's undersized. He's a phenomenal shooter. And that team against the best teams in the league. And then, of course, they lose to the Denver Nuggets. So as a handicapper, how do you go about that with Golden State? You just flip a coin, think, okay, maybe they're not going to show up against the Bucks?
You know, a couple of these games, when you look at least their losses, and, you know, the game against Milwaukee, they had played Boston the night before, and they lost in double overtime. It was the end of a seven-game road trip, and I think the stat going into that, which was amazing, I didn't even know this, was no team had ever gone 7-0 in a road trip in NBA history. So history was against them, and, you know, they played poorly against Milwaukee on the second of a back-to-back, the end of a long road trip, and, you know, they end up losing. Then they go to Denver, and Denver's played well at home, and they lose that game. I actually had Detroit against Golden State when they just lost to them prior to that blowout against Cleveland. And it's just those spots, I think, on the road with Golden State, you can find them now because you don't know which Golden State team you're getting on the road. But at home, like I said earlier, it's just so hard to go against them because of, I don't know if it's the Oracle magic. I feel like this goes back to when Baron Davis and Steven Jackson and those Warrior teams, the ones that were the one that beat Dallas as an 8 seed. I feel like there is that kind of magic at Oracle Arena that they have. But then when they get on the road, again, you talk about a coin flip. They go to Cleveland, they roll the Cavs. They go to Chicago, they roll the Bulls. They go into Detroit, Milwaukee, and lose those games. So you wonder which ones they're getting up for. I mean, yeah, think about it. Detroit, Milwaukee, Denver. Mm-hmm. Those aren't great teams. They lost all those games. They go to Chicago, they went by 30. They go to Cleveland, they're up by 40. Like, and those are teams that are threats to go to the NBA Finals. So you almost want to say, what about the teams that are subpar? Are those the games that Golden State's not going to get up for, as opposed to teams that are very good? You know, if they're playing at San Antonio, at Oklahoma City, that's probably when they step up their game, as opposed to if they're playing mediocre teams, maybe on a back-to-back, maybe they're not looking forward to it. So that may be the angle to attack Golden State, at least on the road.
Very interesting. Now, again, we didn't talk, Kevin. Do you have any picks for this week?
I have some for Thursday night, and I'll give you a few here now. Obviously, I know it's not a lot of shelf life as opposed to football, but a couple of games I like, at least in college basketball, for Thursday night. I like the Cincinnati Bearcats. They are at Connecticut taking on the Huskies. They're getting two. Cincinnati's played very well of late. They've won four of their past five, and their two losses on the road in American play came at SMU by two and at Temple by two in overtime. So they've been very competitive on the road, even though they've fallen short a few times. Also, another college game I like tonight, a big battle in Conference USA. Middle Tennessee State goes to Marshall to take on the Thundering Herd. Both teams are 6-1 in Conference USA play, and Middle Tennessee State has won six straight, was losing the first game to UAB. They were up at halftime in that game, and UAB has played very well, so obviously no shame in that loss. But for Marshall, they're coming off four straight road losses. Their home wins really aren't great, and they were very poor in the non-conference season. They've played a lot better since they've come to conference season, but I just think Middle Tennessee State's a better team, and taking them as that 1-point underdog on the road is probably the best play.
Always a pleasure, Kevin, and of course I can't wait until we talk next week about the Super Bowl.
Absolutely, and we'll see which direction the line goes, and very curious to see over the next 7 days that if the money keeps coming on Carolina, or if it gets to a point where Denver gets a little bit of buyback, and then we'll see maybe if it settles back in the 4-5 range.
That is all the time we've got for this week. I want to thank all of you for listening. I want to thank my guests, Kate Rupp and Kevin Rogers. We'll be back again next week. Hope you have a great wagering weekend. Talk to you again soon.